Imagine walking into a pizzeria, right?
Okay.
And you ask the guy for like just one slice of pepperoni. But the owner looks at you and says, "Well, you actually have to buy the ovens, the building, the entire business just to take a single bite."
Which is obviously a terrible deal.
Right, exactly. But I mean, that is exactly how traditional real estate has worked for centuries. It is very much this all or nothing game.
For sure.
But looking at the landscape in 2026, there is this massive technological shift that is finally letting you just buy the slice. So welcome to the deep dive.
Glad to be here.
Today we are tearing into a really comprehensive manual. It's from the Usul Gamma blog, and it's called Blockchain Property Investment Explained in Simple Terms.
And I just want to jump in and say what makes this specific guide so worth our time is that it isn't, just another tech pitch. Usul Gamma has actually synthesized some incredibly dense, heavy-hitting research here. I mean, we're looking at recent data from MIT, Morgan Stanley, the OECD, and the Bank for International Settlements.
The heavyweights, basically.
Exactly. And they are all tracking this fundamental collision between the really volatile world of crypto tech and the concrete reality of physical bricks.
Yeah. And so our mission today for you listening is to figure out the actual mechanics of that collision. We really want to know if this hybrid model is, the shortcut to real estate investing that you've been looking for, or if it's just another layer of financial complexity.
Right.
So, okay, let's unpack this. The Usul Gamma guide makes it very clear that the timing of this shift like happening right now is no accident. So why is 2026 the specific tipping point for merging digital ledgers with physical buildings?
Well, it really comes down to a breaking point in investor psychology.
Okay.
And this is heavily supported by that Morgan Stanley data we're looking at. Because over the last few years, investors have just experienced massive fatigue.
From the volatility, right?
Exactly. On one side, you have these purely digital assets that offer incredible liquidity. Like you can trade them at 2 a.m. on a Sunday from your couch.
Which is great.
It is. But their price swings are, frankly, entirely divorced from any real-world utility.
Yeah, completely detached.
Right. And then on the other side, you have global real estate,
Right.
which is this massive $300 trillion market of tangible income-generating stability.
But it's practically frozen.
Yes, it's completely illiquid. Your capital gets locked up. The legal paperwork is basically archaic. And the barrier to entry requires just massive upfront cash.
So, I mean, investors essentially want the stability of a physical asset, but they demand the liquidity and like the user experience of a stock trading app.
That is the exact gap that blockchain property investment is filling right now. And the OECD report highlights that regulatory frameworks have they finally matured enough this year to allow a secure bridge between those two worlds.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, so you can stay entirely within a seamless digital ecosystem, but your money is anchored to a physical apartment complex or, a commercial high-rise.
Okay, but I do want to push back on the premise here for a second. Because traditional finance already has a solution for this, right? Like real estate investment trusts or REITs. They've been around for decades. You buy a share of a REIT and you get exposure to real estate without actually buying a whole building. So how is just slapping the word blockchain on this any different from what, I don't know, my grandfather could buy through his broker?
No, that raises a really important question, and it is a distinction that the Morgan Stanley analysts emphasize quite a bit.
Okay.
When you buy into a traditional REIT, you are basically buying a share in a company, and that company manages a massive blind pool of properties.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so you have zero say in which specific buildings they buy or sell. Plus, you are burdened by the corporate overhead of that entire management team.
Right, all the administrative bloat.
Exactly. But blockchain tokenization allows for direct fractional ownership of a specific asset. You aren't buying a share in some massive corporate fund.
You're buying the building itself.
Yes. You are buying a direct fractional stake in, say, the apartment building on the corner of Fifth and Main.
So it's literally the difference between investing in a massive agriculture conglomerate versus buying like a fraction of one specific apple orchard.
That's a great way to put it.
I get the appeal of targeting the specific asset, but let's look at the actual physics of this because this is where my brain gets a little stuck.
Sure.
If the blockchain acts as this indestructible digital ledger, how does the physical legal system actually recognize it? I mean, a concrete building doesn't speak digital code.
No, it doesn't.
So how does holding a digital token legally bind you to a physical deed that's recorded down at some county clerk's office.
Yep, that legal bridge is the single most critical mechanism we need to understand today. And the MIT researchers break this down beautifully in their paper.
Okay, let's hear it.
The physical building itself is never actually put, quote unquote, on the blockchain.
Oh, really?
Right. Instead, the property is purchased and held by a legal entity. Typically, this is what's called a special purpose vehicle, or an SPV.
An SPV, okay.
Yeah, think of an SPV as a highly specific, legally binding lockbox. And that lockbox is what holds the actual paper deed to the real estate.
Okay, so the SPV holds the physical deed and the digital tokens. Where do they fit in?
So the tokens represent legally recognized shares of ownership in that specific SPV.
Ah, I see.
Yeah, so when you hold the token in your digital wallet, you own a percentage of the legal lock docs, and therefore a legal percentage of the physical building inside it.
That makes so much sense.
And MIT's research shows that because courts and regulators globally already recognize the structure of an SPV, the digital token is basically backed by the full weight of traditional property law.
So it's kind of like turning a physical building into a 10,000-piece jigsaw puzzle. You don't need to buy the whole box.
You
can just buy one corner piece, and the blockchain just serves as this indelible, unforgeable ink on the back of that piece, proving to the legal system that it belongs to you.
That's spot on. And because that ink cannot be erased or tampered with, you don't need an army of lawyers and title companies to verify ownership every single time a fraction of the building changes hands.
That friction just evaporates.
Completely. You can sell your puzzle piece to someone across the globe in seconds, peer-to-peer.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Once you actually own that digital token, how does it actually generate returns for you?
Well, the USL Gamma Guide outlines two main revenue streams.
Okay.
The first is property appreciation. So if the physical building's value goes up, the token value rises. And the second is rental income.
Right. But the mechanics of that rent collection are where the guide introduces these things called smart contracts. And I want you to walk me through the actual plumbing of this.
Sure thing.
Because if a tenant in that physical building writes a rent check in fiat currency, let's say US dollars, and my token lives on a blockchain, how does that physical check turn into digital money in my account?
It requires a really fascinating piece of financial plumbing. So think about traditional real estate. You rely on a property manager collecting the check, depositing it into a bank.
Waiting for it to clear.
Right, waiting for clearance. And then someone is calculating everyone's ownership percentage manually and issuing new checks to all the owners. It is painfully slow and prone to human error.
Sounds like a nightmare.
It is. But in the blockchain model, a smart contract replaces that entire administrative department.
Just a piece of code.
Exactly.
Yeah.
A smart contract is just self-executing code. But to bridge that gap between fiat and crypto, the system relies on two key elements, stablecoins and Oracle networks.
Okay, so stablecoins being cryptocurrencies that are pegged one-to-one with a traditional currency like the dollar.
Correct. So the property manager receives the tenant's rent, that fiat currency is immediately converted into a stable coin.
Okay, so now the money is in a digital format the blockchain can actually read.
Yes, but the smart contract still needs to know that it's time to act. It can't see the real world. That is where an oracle comes in.
An oracle?
Right, an oracle is basically a verified data feed that tells the blockchain what is happening in the real world.
So the oracle signals the smart contract saying, hey, the rent has landed.
Exactly. And the instant the oracle verifies that deposit, the smart contract triggers. It instantly references the indestructible ledger to see exactly which digital wallets hold the tokens for that specific building.
Wow.
And then it mathematically divides the stable coins based on those exact percentages, and it deposits your cut directly into your wallet.
Instantly.
In seconds. There are no manual calculations, there's no bank holds, and no administrative fees being deducted for processing.
Okay, wait, let me stop you there. You say it eliminates middlemen and administrative fees. But earlier you just said we still rely on a property manager to actually collect the physical check and convert it.
That's true.
And we rely on a platform to host the SPV lockbox. So aren't we just trading a traditional middleman like a bank for a new unregulated tech middleman?
What's fascinating here is that the regulatory landscape has actually anticipated this exact concern. You are entirely correct that the physical property still requires physical management. Roofs still leak, and tenants still need to be vetted.
Right, you can't code away a leaky roof.
Exactly. But you aren't trading one opaque middleman for another. You are trading an opaque, slow middleman for a transparent, automated protocol. The smart contracts code is totally public. You can see the exact rules of distribution yourself.
But what about the platform itself? Let's talk about the absolute worst case scenario here.
Yeah, okay, let's do it.
Because the Bank for International Settlements report explicitly warns about platform insolvency.
Yes, they do.
If I buy tokens through a specific tech platform and tomorrow that startup goes completely bankrupt and their servers shut down, what happens to my investment? Does my token suddenly just become a useless string of code? Or do I still legally own a piece of a physical building?
This is the ultimate reality check for anyone entering this space. And the BIS report is very, very clear on how secure platforms must operate to prevent this.
Okay.
A compliant platform utilizes what is called a bankruptcy remote structure. Remember the SPV we discussed earlier? The legal lockbox holding the deed?
Right, yeah.
That SPV is established as an entirely separate legal entity from the tech platform that sold you the tokens.
Oh, I see.
So if the tech platform goes completely bankrupt and disappears, the platform's creditors cannot touch the real estate. The SPV remains totally intact.
Okay.
The physical building remains owned by the SPV, and the blockchain ledger, which remember exists independently of any single company's servers, still proves that your wallet holds the shares of that SPV.
So the legal ownership literally survives the death of the platform.
It does. A new management company can simply be appointed to service the SPV, and the token holders retain their assets without missing a beat.
Wow.
However, and this is a big cover, the BIS warns that not all platforms structure themselves this way.
Of course.
If you invest through a shady platform that commingles its operational funds with the property assets, a platform bankruptcy could trigger a massive, messy legal battle over your investment.
Which brings us back to the inherent risks of the physical world, right? Because the blockchain part might be secure, but a digital token cannot stop a neighborhood's property value from declining.
Definitely not.
It can't force a tenant to renew their lease. If the building sits empty, that fancy smart contract has zero rent to distribute.
Exactly. The technology mitigates administrative and legal friction, but it does not magically erase market forces. A bad property is a bad property, no matter how elegantly it happens to be tokenized.
So understanding that the platform is this crucial bridge and the real estate still has to be vetted manually, how do you actually execute this?
What?
Because the Ossol Gamma Guide lays out a very specific workflow for getting started. And what really stands out to me is that Ossol Gamma specifically targets income-generating properties.
Yes.
They are not tokenizing, like, empty patches of dirt and promising investors that a luxury condo will magically appear in 5 years.
And that focus on already performing assets is a vital safety net for this hybrid model. Speculative development carries immense physical risk. Well, you've got construction delays, zoning disputes, supply chain failures. By focusing on buildings that already have paying tenants in them, platforms like Ossol Gamma allow investors to utilize the blockchain's efficiency to capture immediate, verifiable cash flow.
Rather than just, you know, speculating on future potential.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's walk through their actual process. You browse a curated list of properties, you review the location, the yield, the risks, and then you hit the major hurdle for most people who explore digital assets. You have to verify your identity.
Yes, the KYC process. Know your customer.
Right. And in a world where crypto enthusiasts champion anonymity, why is handing over your passport to a platform an absolute requirement here?
Of course, there's the standard anti-money laundering component. But what's really critical here isn't the identity check itself. It's how these platforms are tying that digital identity directly to real-world property deeds to satisfy regulators.
To make it legally binding.
Exactly. To legally uphold that SPV structure we discussed, the government must know exactly who owns the shares of that legal entity.
Because it's real property.
Right. Without strict KYC, the tokens would just be treated as unregistered securities by the SEC or whatever international equivalent, which would make the entire operation illegal.
Wow.
So the friction of the identity check is basically the price you pay for legal enforceability in the physical world.
Okay, that makes sense. So once that legal bridge is established, you fund your account. The guide notes, you can deposit traditional dollars or use existing cryptocurrency.
Yep.
And then you simply click buy. The smart contract updates the indestructible ledger and boom, you are officially a fractional landlord.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, your due diligence burden hasn't disappeared here. It is simply shifted.
What do you mean by shifted?
Well, you no longer have to spend months negotiating with banks or haggling with title companies, but you absolutely must scrutinize the smart contract's fee structure. Like, what percentage is the management team taking before the oracle triggers the distribution?
Right, you have to read the fine print.
And you still must analyze the local job market surrounding the physical building. The friction has been removed from the transaction, which means you actually have more time to focus purely on the quality of the asset itself.
So what does this all mean? If we step back and look at the collision of these two worlds, blockchain property investment isn't just like a shiny new crypto derivative.
No, not at all.
It is essentially a structural tool designed to forcefully dismantle the gatekeeping of traditional real estate. By utilizing digital tokens to represent legal shares in a bankruptcy remote lockbox, it strips away the massive capital requirements and all those bloated administrative middlemen.
Exactly.
It allows you to basically buy the exact slice of the pizza you want with the legal protections of traditional property law backing up the speed and automation of digital code.
It's a fundamental rewiring of capital efficiency. And the Morgan Stanley and OECD reports point to this not as some fleeting trend, but literally as the new baseline infrastructure for global finance.
That's huge.
It is. Understanding this mechanism is imperative because we are moving toward a reality where basically every illiquid asset on Earth will be fractionalized and traded on these transparent ledgers.
It totally redefines accessibility. But as we wrap up this analysis, there is a broader implication you mentioned to me before we started recording that I think perfectly captures where all of this is heading.
Yeah, so the focus of the Ulsul Gamma Guide is heavily weighted on the sheer ease of transfer. This idea that you can buy and sell these microshares of global real estate peer-to-peer instantly.
Right.
And that leaves me with this lingering thought for you to consider. If the friction of buying and selling property drops to near zero, how long until we stop viewing real estate as a permanent physical anchor in our lives?
Oh, wow.
Right? If you can seamlessly swap a fraction of a commercial building in Tokyo for a fraction of an apartment complex in New York straight from your phone, how long until we start viewing the very spaces we live and work in not as fixed lifelong commitments, but as completely fluid, globally shared commodities?
That is wild to think about. When the friction of the old world disappears, the way we value the literal ground beneath our feet completely changes.
Exactly.
Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We encourage you to keep questioning the mechanisms behind the market, stay curious, and we will catch you next time.